government secrets, magical stones, computer hacking, but definitely no bras. We watched Fateful Findings, and it's time to hashtag bring the Breen tonight on
Breen Movie Mania.
Welcome to the crossroads of camp, the bastion of the bizarre, the place where low budgets meet high praise. Yes, it's B-Movie Mania. And now, B-Movie Maniacs, here are your hosts, the cream of the crap, the connoisseurs of cult, your cinematic creepy uncles, Paul Brooks, Mike Hayes, Jason Hulls, and Crazy Chris Hudson.
Good day, good evening to you, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to B-Movie Mania, the podcast where we discuss and dissect movies that begin with the letter B. Is that correct? Is that how this works?
Bateful Bindings, yes. That's what we watched today.
Exactly. Beale Bond.
Yeah. Perfect.
My name is Paul Brooks. Joining me, as always, is Mr. Chris Hudson.
Hello!
Mr. Jason Hulls.
Hi.
And Mr. Mike Hayes.
Hey.
Hello?
Sorry, I...
Spilled his
Are you
beer.
Okay?
He spilled his beer.
I was just speaking can language.
Well, gentlemen, I believe I speak for all of us when I say it was a magical day.
a magical day.
It so was.
Oh, boy, yeah.
We watched a movie called Fateful Findings, and I'm gonna tell you all this right now. You know, I have the pleasure and the privilege of running the show this evening, and I have to run a pretty tight ship tonight because there is so much to unpack with this movie. It truly is going to be magical.
Paul, would you say you have so much work? So much work!
I would go so far as to say that, yes indeed. Real quick, before we get into the plot of this film, I thought it might be wise to give listeners, our B-movie maniacs out there, a little bit of a Neil Breen primer for those of you listening who might not be familiar with him. Let's just go into a couple quick things and feel free to add anything along to this. But, you know, I looked him up, did a little research. Neil lives in Las Vegas, and by day he is an architect, and he's also a licensed real estate agent. So that's how he makes his money.
That makes so much sense.
To finance these films. So he's not your, you know, typical filmmaker in the sense that you usually go out and find investors or people to help you finance. He does this shit all by himself. And, you know, you got to give him credit.
I really hope he designs the homes he sells.
There's no way. But that's how he gets those homes.
He does commercial buildings, I think.
Do you think, yeah, that's how he has to be able to get access to those buildings? Because he's in a couple, like, larger buildings in his movies, right? I bet you he has a relationship with those people he built those for. And so that's how he gets access.
Did he build the storage area, the storage shed?
Yeah, the crate. Yeah.
Did you guys know that he actually did not go to film school?
No.
Neil Breen, I was looking this up too. Neil Breen saw a movie being made. He was on set for a couple days. He's never seen a movie in his life. So this is a real true auteur vision of just someone repeating their lines 10 times, but not editing any of that out. Because I think he thinks that's how a movie is.
Also, I think the day he was on set, they only filmed feet and extreme close-ups.
God. It's like someone, like he saw a Quentin Tarantino movie and went, oh yeah, feet, okay.
So many feet. There's so many feet.
So many feet, so many things to get into. So let's get started here. The plot of Fateful Findings, a film by Neil Breen. His third film out of four. This came out in 2013. And Neil, believe it or not, this is going to be shocking, but Neil is the star of this film. He plays a hacker slash vigilante named Dylan.
I didn't know he was named Dylan until like 45 minutes into the movie.
I found out just now.
He knew he was named Dylan.
So we start, the film starts with, we sort of go back in time to, well, I guess 45 to 22 years ago, depending on who we're talking about here. But
yeah, the years were hard to kneel.
Jay, why don't you help me out here a little bit and explain what happens in the opening moments of the film?
Yeah. Okay. So it's two kids, and I'll say this: the scenery that he got in the very beginning, it's great. The location looks great. There's two kids. They're running along a path, and a big, like, dead ram skull is laying on the ground, and it turns to watch them go. That's your first hint that something is up.
Is that not a common thing to happen?
I don't know. Maybe in Neil Land, Breen World?
In the Breeniverse?
Breeniverse. So these kids are just sort of frolicking in the wilderness, which, now that I think about it, is kind of weird, because there were no parents around, and that was pretty
They're like 50 miles out from any civilization.
Yeah, they're way out. They find a mushroom, a totally normal-looking mushroom, and it turns into a magic box.
No, Jay, more importantly, I think these children kill that mushroom, and we see the mushroom ghost flying off. And you'll see the mushroom ghost a few times in the movie.
Translucent forms, it's a big theme here. And they, basically, the girl says, who is older than the boy, seemingly, says she's going to make a bracelet out of some little rocks that are on the ground. And Breen finds, looks like a black, shiny, it looked like a six-sided dice, but then I got a closer look later, and it's just kind of a little rock. And he finds it. And then the girl moves. Her parents get called away. It happens like that fast. Oh, military or something. She's got
to
move.
I have to say one thing real quick. When in the scene where the girl goes away, it wasn't clear to me what was happening. I thought the boy's family was abandoning him. They were just driving off.
You thought they were brother and sister?
Yeah.
It was very confusing to figure out exactly, because you're right, Jay. It did happen so fast. It was like, are they going, you know, to the grocery store for the day? No, they're moving away.
They're moving.
They're leaving the kid
behind.
And
Breen goes, there's a little voiceover that kicks in as, you know, it's this scene of her pulling away and him chasing the car. And he says something like, I don't know, like, I never saw her again or something, which of course he does. But he says, I never saw her again. To me, right there, end the movie. Short film. It's sad.
Beautiful.
Magic rock.
Mushroom
done.
Ghost. Done. That's all you need.
Mushroom ghost. That's it.
So fast forward, you know, 22 to 45 years later, we're not sure. Our main character, Dylan, is now an adult, and he's going about his life. He, you know, still to this day has never seen his childhood friend, Leah. And unfortunately, Dylan is involved in a pretty brutal car accident. Oh, is that funny to you, Chris?
It is. You know what? Honestly, to give Neil Breen credit, I thought the effect of the car hitting Neil Breen looked pretty good.
I agree.
Really
I was surprised by it.
Yeah,
I thought, he used the shot, like he walks out into the road and you see the cell phone, he's talking on the phone. You see the cell phone hit the ground. I thought that was going to be it. I didn't think you'd actually see him get hit. I thought that was supposed to sell the
really
accident.
Surprised.
Well, but here's the problem with this. He gets into this car accident, and obviously he gets put into the hospital. Now, when you see the car accident, it does look good, but you can tell that the car hits him squarely in the chest. But when he wakes up in the hospital, he has 150 pounds of gauze all over his face.
with the breathing tube over his gauze. Yeah.
He looks like the fucking Elephant Man.
He also has plastic tubes, gauze tape to his wrists. Like, for some reason, there's like a tube in each wrist.
They don't even try to hide any of that. Like, I get if you obviously can't give someone an IV or whatever. They all you have to do is show them taking it off, but not up close and not like the slowest speed ever possible to man. But this 97-year-old man slowly and up close just peels off this tube. And then the same with his face. He takes it off and it's just like, it's just so obvious. All you had to do is not show it like that.
All right, Mike, I got a solution for all this, okay? This movie looks like someone took a much longer movie and just took random scenes out of it. And so the scene where we find out that those tubes were implanted by like aliens or like a conspiracy government sort of thing was totally missed. So those tubes are in there to steal his vital fluids. And we just never see that part.
Chris, I propose this was three different movies that they just took parts out and lumped them all together.
Mike, which film did they take the shot of Neil Breen's crack?
Oh, that's from Neil Breen's romantic comedy he made called I'm Hooked on Crack in Vegas.
You know, that was a prolonged crack shot.
Can I say right now that if we're going to go here, I'm gonna get this right out in the open. I'm really glad they left the Breen peen on the cutting room floor.
Yes.
Don't need to see
Thank
that.
You, Neil.
Saw enough of his
butt. It was close.
Don't need anything else.
It was so close, though.
It was so close.
Twice, it's like that angle where it's just bare, just like there's a darkened shadow, and that's the only thing keeping us from the Breen peen.
You know what? To be fair to Neil, he usually, from everything that I have seen, we should mention real quick that we played his film I Am Here
Now
dot 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 dot
now
for our most recent 24-hour B movie marathon. So all four of us, if I'm correct here, have seen two of his films, right?
I didn't watch this one.
Oh, okay. So you're just guessing on all this?
You're guessing about the Breen peen?
He's dreamed of the Breen peen.
But he's an equal opportunity, what would you call it, non-nudist? Because there's a lot of sort of implied sensuality in this film in terms of what you see. But I can't think of any nudity other than Breen's nipples and crack.
Breen is the only nudity, and implied sensuality is, I think that's the implied with a capital I. It's very implied. Yeah.
There was a lot of stiff opposition hugging. To hugging. Actual nudity.
Stiff hugging.
And there was
stiff
no,
that's all you get.
No stiffy, though, which is fine. You did see in the shower, when he's showering in blood, when he gets back from the hospital.
Yeah, well, that's where we're at right now with the plot. Well, really. He gets out of the hospital.
Yeah, and he's showering in that blood, and you do see under the for some reason, his wife gets into the shower with him while wearing a nightgown, and there's literally blood all over the floor. Like, it is absolutely just a murder scene still. And she's just in there with him, and you do see a little bit of a crack, a wet T-shirt butt crack, if you will. But mostly it's disgusting because there is blood everywhere. And he's still got his freaking mask on in the shower.
They just pivot, like slowly pivot.
Oh, it's
180
so,
degrees.
It's so... Guys, can I tell you the noise I made both times watching this movie throughout the entire movie?
Let's hear it.
It was this. I'd be watching it, and then just go, and then look at the screen again because I'd be covering my face out of just sheer just I don't know what's happening, and then it would just come out again just
I should say too, I actually really enjoyed the experience of watching this overall.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just so awkward. So much of it is so just like I feel bad for like the people involved, not the people involved making it, but the people in the story, in the plot. Like, I feel it's just everyone's incompetent, and I like to imagine it's the people in the movie, in the reality of the movie that are incompetent, not the production of it.
What about that crazy doctor that wasn't even his patient, but she had to come and check up on him anyway?
True. That's true. That is actually kind of important in the hospital before we see the Breen crack. he's a neurologist. A blonde neurologist comes to check on him, and
he's not even her patient.
She had to come and check on him.
Yeah. Just for some reason. We don't know why yet, but there are mystical forces at work.
And mushroom ghosts. Yeah.
She had a really nice bracelet.
That looked a lot like the one the mushroom ghost left behind, if I'm not mistaken.
Wait, what? Yeah. What?
Yeah.
So when Dylan gets home, he takes a lovely hot shower with his wife Emily. Kind of a funny thing happens. These injuries that he has sustained kind of miraculously heal up pretty darn quick.
As if they're only makeup.
He's still in pain, though.
He is still in pain. In fact, doesn't he? He says that, I think, at one point. He says, multiple. I've got great family genes, but I'm still in pain.
I'm constantly saying that.
It seems like it never happened.
I've got great family genes, but I'm still in pain.
I realize that the drinking game for this movie is anytime someone says something redundant, you drink. Because they just repeat everything over and over again.
Call 911. Call 911. Call 911. Call 911.
It's literally like someone said, hey, say this like a couple times different ways, and a director would cut out the one that makes the most sense. But they just left every fucking delivery of it in.
Paul, whenever you're ready, at some point, I have a top 10 list of things of Breenisms make a Neil Breen movie.
Yes, I have it in my notes. We will be getting to that. I was calling them Breen marks, Neil Breen hallmarks.
Okay.
We will certainly be getting to that. But first,
ooh, burp.
He goes to, or I guess he hosts, like a barbecue in his backyard. Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah.
And where instead of playing music, he plays crowd noises.
Yes, thank you. There's so much crowd noise for eight people.
Is there eight? I don't think there's even eight.
I don't even think there's eight.
Maybe not even eight.
So, hold on, I'm just...
Are you twisting a turd out? We skipped over that table conversation, which is fine, because it's just ungodly.
I mean, at this point, it's really hard to actually go through point by point, because there are three movies going on.
Yeah, yeah, by all means, if I skip over something and you want to throw it in there, please do, because attempting to file this movie, even when you're watching it, is pretty difficult.
Well, while we're doing that, I just want to say that Breen's best friend, that moment when he came on really hard to his wife, and she turns him down, so like a scene later, he's working on his Ferrari, and she comes out saying she just needs some loving. And it's like, woman, you just turned him down 5 minutes ago. No wonder he's working on his car.
And those Miller Lights. He had those two Miller Lights every time he was at the car.
Were the Miller Lights or Bud Lights? I thought they were Bud Lights.
They were Millers. They were Millers.
So we're at this barbecue, right? And someone shows up sort of unexpectedly. It is the nurse, the doctor, who came over to Dylan in the hospital because she felt oddly compelled to check on him. So he recognizes her from the hospital, but then, Mike, what happens? He sees something that triggers a memory.
Well, her phone is ringing in her pocket, and so she pulls it out, and a notepad falls out onto the ground, and it opens up magically to the page that just says, "It's a magical day," which is from the intro of the movie. And that's when things get super creepy, and he refuses to talk to her like a normal person and only whispers into her ear no matter how many people are around them.
So he has the realization that this is his childhood friend, and this is the first time that he's seen her in a very long time. And so, Jay, we seem to have a bit of an age discrepancy here for some reason.
Yes, we do. In fact, time has been very, very difficult for Neil. And he looks like he's pushing 60, and she looks like she's maybe 40. But somehow, she is supposed to be older than
40. I thought she was like 30.
I don't know. I'm just trying. I'm stretching it. But she is supposed to be older, and she clearly looks much, much younger. Breen world. It's crazy, the Breenverse.
Yeah, crazy things happen in the Breenverse.
Speaking of Breen world, I love the explanation why she doesn't know, she didn't know in the hospital who this was. Because the doctor's coming in, and Neil's not her patient, but she's over here making a diagnosis of some sort. And she says, they have to say this in the... And I would have just, like, forgotten about this unless they didn't bring this up at the party. But she's like, oh yeah, I didn't know it was you. I didn't bother to look at your chart. She would have seen his name and made the connection at the beginning of the movie.
Right.
Well, not to mention, we haven't asked the question of, why is she at the party?
That's what I want to know. Like, she's not the doctor. Like, I could maybe see the stretch of, like, oh, hey, we're doing better. We're having a get-together. The doctor who... But no one even worked on him. He fucking checked himself out 5 minutes after being in the goddamn place. So it's not like they had a relationship with the doctor. They just called him and were like, they were confused, and oh, that was it. Like, that's the relationship.
Mike, I think she was a friend of the Black Cube that Breen carries in his pocket.
Well, that actually I think the Black Cube is true, Chris.
Yeah.
The black thing. Well,
that was a good guess.
It would be like the four of us going to a party, pretty much just the four of us, and then like Paul's cab driver. Like that's like this exact sort of the same relationship.
3 months ago. From three goddamn months ago.
Who didn't actually even really give Paul a ride anywhere?
Paul got in and went, nah, you know what, I don't need a ride anymore, and then got out again, and then that fucker shows up at a party 3 months later.
And then Paul whispers creepily into his ear.
Yeah, Paul, what are you doing with that cabbie? Gross.
Well, stop holding his hand, Paul.
Here's the issue. Leah shows up to this party, and there's this great moment where they have the realization that they were childhood friends. That's all well and good, except for the fact that Dylan and Leah instantly have a big-time romance connection going on, a lot of chemistry.
Well, chemistry in quotes.
Yeah. Chemistry. I'm air quoting right now for listeners out there. But, you know, Dylan is married. He has a wife, so this instantly presents a pretty big issue.
She has a fiancé.
Leah has a boyfriend, a fiancé.
Right.
Star-crossed lovers.
Can I get my impression of the chemistry they have when he realizes it's her?
Please do.
Okay. So he reaches down to get the notebook, reads it, and says, is this your notebook? And then she like leans down to his level, and he just says at her, is it really you? Is it you? I knew it was really you. It is you. Like, that's what it is. Like, there's no dialogue. There's nothing. It's just long pauses and weirdness.
I would pay a lot of money to have this adapted to a stage show acted the exact same way.
You know, I would go.
This
really makes me want to buy a house from Neil Breen just to see if he sells it the same way. Like, this is a great house. This is a nice house. This is a good house. You should buy this
house.
What,
Mike?
Did you guys hear about that Point Break show they do? I think they do it in L.A., and they were doing it in Chicago for a while, where it was Point Break, and the character of Keanu Reeves was played by a random person in the audience who had to read cue cards the whole show.
No.
Yes, 100% was a thing. Is still a thing, I think.
I just want to mention something real quick about Leah's actual journal or diary or whatever you want to call it. We mentioned that it magically opens to the page from, you know, back in the day. It was a magical day. But are we to believe that she has been carrying around this journal in her pocket? It doesn't fit in her pocket.
Nope.
So, like, how does she still have it? And B, like, it's in pristine condition. Like, it looks like it was purchased at Target 2 days ago.
Well, it was, yeah.
Paul, yes. If, you know, I mean, strange things happen in the Breeniverse.
Right.
Let me ask you this. If you were going to carry around an odd object in your pocket every day, what would you carry?
Oh, well, I think you know the answer to this.
I know the answer to this. I just want you to say it.
Back about, 20 years ago when I first met Jay, we, as we mentioned before, we were playing together in a metal band, and I had seen The Great Muppet Caper not too long ago, and there was a character in the film by the name of Lou Zealand, more of a tertiary Muppet character, if you will, and he carried with him a roll of paper towels, just in case anyone needed them. And I don't know why, but I thought it was the funniest fucking thing I'd ever seen. So I went to Walgreens.
Yes, Paul went to Walgreens, he got himself a roll of paper towels, and he carried them for the next 16 years.
I still have the paper towels. They're like yellow, and there's tape all over them, but I still have them.
Jesus. Are you sure they're not pristine? I'm pretty sure they're pristine.
Definitely. No, I will bring them over to your place, Chris. They are not pristine. Do you need any paper towels for something?
You know, I do, actually. I've had a spillage.
There you go. I got you covered. Here's the paper towels.
Yes.
Final payoff.
Is that a question for everybody or just me?
Sure. No, I mean, yeah. What other? Let's just pick an item real quick. I'm going to pick a hammer. I would carry a hammer.
A ball peen hammer?
A ball peen hammer in my pocket every day.
Well, that makes it easy for my choice. I'd carry a bream peen hammer.
I don't know what that is, and I do not want to know.
Yes, quick, Mike, God. Say yours.
I would just carry a brain peen.
Oh, no. It's gotten worse.
Oh, God.
And how have we gotten, like, this far into the podcast without going brain, 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 brain,
brain, brain, brain, brain, brain, brain, brain, brain, brain, brain, brain, brain, brain, brain, brain, brain, brain,
brain. Thank you.
Paul, is that you? You got a drink?
Let's not explain that.
You know, I just realized that that sound, though, is the sound of everyone who listens to this podcast turning it off.
Yeah.
Except for that one guy. Brain, 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 brain.
For those of you who are still listening, Dylan's wife, Emily, kind of has, you know, she has some issues with alcohol and drugs, and there's issues with Jim, the previously mentioned best friend. Some shit goes down in his garage while he's polishing the mirrors.
Not just some shit goes down. They go from tossing wine onto each other to, she's got a gun!
And what happens?
She shoots him. Oh, yeah. Bam. Straight-up murder.
And then the previously mentioned stepdaughter, who, by the way, I don't think we've mentioned, has the hots for Neil Breen.
And Neil Breen gives her some seriously mixed signals. Oh, no, you can't do this anymore, while nodding his head yes. No, you have to stop. No. Please, no more.
The stepdaughter is out at Dylan's pool at some point and, like, takes her shirt off, but, like, you just see her back, right?
Yeah, Dylan. She's in the pool with a bikini top, and that comes off. And
yeah, she calls him. She's like, Dylan.
No, you can't come over anymore.
Aggressively, just awful.
What's the noise, Mike? All right, so help me out. Where the fuck are we? Because this shit goes down in the garage, but I have it all out of order.
So Jim dies, and then onto something we haven't really mentioned yet on this podcast. Back to the hacking.
Yeah.
Is this
say.
The point? Is this the actual point where you actually find out what the hell is going on?
I think. Yeah, he mentions it earlier when he's hacking into government and international secrets.
I've got so much to do, I'll never get done. I'm going to continue hacking into these government systems to see what I can find out. About all this national and international corruption I know is going on.
The point you're referring to, Jay, about where we learn about what's actually happening in this movie, never happens.
No,
So Dylan is supposedly a novelist, and he's working on his next novel on his 6 different computers.
That are never turned on.
Of which have floppy disk drives, which those were being phased out starting in 1998.
And just a heads up. He claims that this is what he's doing, but secretly, he is hacking into government computers, trying to learn government secrets, corporate secrets, and his wife doesn't know about this yet.
I have not been writing another novel. I've been hacking into government and corporate international secrets all over the world. And I'm going to expose them all. And no one knows I'm doing it. No one knows.
What? Are you crazy?
And he's gotten farther than any hacker ever has.
He's looking into national and international secrets.
His wife, he divulges the secret to his wife, and she finds out that he in fact has been hacking, that he in fact is a hacker.
He's very busy. So much work to do.
God damn it, he has a master's in computer science.
He has a damn master's in computer science.
I have a damn master's degree in computer science, and I turn out to be a writer of novels. All that's coming to an end now.
Chris, do you relate to him? Do you oftentimes have so much work to do?
Because I have a damn bachelor's in computer science, I have so much work to do.
I hope the next season of Mr. Robot steals this plot directly. This movie is
Mr.
the
Robot
next plot.
Mr. Robot has so much work to do. That's a show about a robot, right?
Yeah.
With so much work to do.
I hope they directly tie themselves into the Breeniverse. I hope that Dylan becomes a character on Mr. Robot.
Totally down for that.
I want to back up for 1 second to the suicide, Jim's suicide, or I'm sorry, not suicide, but
murder.
Jim's murder.
Murder, which is framed as a suicide.
Right, because to me this was one of the best parts, just jaw-dropping parts of the movie. Would anyone like to take this one?
I have the direct quote.
Go.
I can't believe you committed suicide. I cannot believe you committed suicide. How could you have done this? How could you have committed suicide? I can't help you out of this one, Jim.
I can't believe you committed suicide. I cannot believe you committed suicide. How could you have done this? How could you have committed suicide? I can't help you out of this one, Jim.
During this, imagine, listener, that while this is brilliantly being delivered in front of the cameras in the saddest moment in cinema history, he is dipping his hand into the wound of it just to get blood all over his fingers so he can wipe it on his fucking face.
Yeah, Dylan stumbles upon this scene and is just gobsmacked that his buddy Jim seemingly has committed suicide.
Yeah, but like, okay, so what you're, I think you're asking, Paul, is the wife of Jim, the buxom blonde.
What's her name? Anybody remember her name?
Jim's wife.
I think it's Amy.
She has a name, I'm sure. But no, she picks up a gun. She goes into the garage where he is once again, you know, the 2 hours they had permission to film with a Ferrari in a garage for this. He's out there. And he's shining a mirror. She comes out. Oh, she's going, I'm going to fill this Ferrari full of bullets. And he goes, no. And as she shoots, he dives in front of the car to block the bullets. And they go inside of his body. And so that's when he dies. And then their daughter stumbles upon this in the most unemotional way. And is
or stepdaughter? I'm still not sure about that.
Well,
Jim's daughter.
His
okay,
daughter,
Jim's
her
yeah.
stepdaughter, and Neil Breen's weird love child.
You can't do this anymore.
I would love to see an episode of Forensic Files about this case.
It's over in 5 seconds.
Right, yeah.
Well, you know what? The thing about this, too, is for all of the, which we'll get to, for all of the justice that gets served by the end of this film,
yes.
That is never addressed again.
I was just thinking about that. I'm like, where does that go from there?
Doesn't go anywhere. It just ends.
Fucking justice.
Paul, I'll tell you where the movie goes from there.
Mm.
We kind of see what I guess is inside the black cube, if a black cube were a room with the walls paved with
trash
like,
bags,
with black garbage bags.
I think that's what Neil Breen's imagination looks like.
It's like black garbage bags everywhere.
Fucking ball of hefties.
God.
like the Matrix.
He's just naked in a room covered with garbage bags.
It's like the Matrix if it were just all garbage.
This movie is like someone described Darren Aronofsky's pie to Neil Breen and he just tried to remake it.
And, you know, if I may say, did a fantastic job.
No, it's beautiful. It's wonderful.
All right. So Dylan and Leah, his old childhood friend, they reconnect. And, spoiler, they become lovers, right? They just cannot help themselves.
Guys, can I ask each of you how long you think it took before his wife's suicide and him hook it up with this chick? Like, how many minutes was it before he called her and said...
Yeah, 20 seconds.
And did she commit suicide, or was it just an OD? Or?
I think it was a purposeful OD.
It was purposeful OD. Yeah. He even say a sad thing when he found her body? He's just like, ah, shucks. And then, like, called the fucking girl from when he knew when she was 8.
Yeah, she conveniently commits suicide and gets out of the way so Breen can pursue his true love. And the doctor breaks up with her fiance.
Yeah, which we don't know about either, but apparently we just make the assumption. Maybe she didn't. Maybe she's
no,
just,
no, she does.
You know.
She says she does. She says she
does.
Oh,
did she? Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so just there's really no conflict of them getting together. They just set up the conflict of like, oh, crap, we both have significant others. And then both of those people just easily go away.
Yeah.
Now, can I say at this point in the movie, there hasn't been a scene with Dylan and this other girl from his childhood since the barbecue.
Well, they run into each other.
At the park, where they start to walk away from each other,
right?
Until they turn around.
You figure that they would like set something up now that they've reconnected, but apparently not. They are just both in the park and see each other again, randomly, right? Green or do world. I have
and
that wrong?
No, I think that's random. And they're like, "Hey, what's up?" And then they just start walking away from each other until they turn around and like. I mean, if I saw anyone that I sort of remotely knew, I'd be like, oh, hey, what's up?
It's supposed to be dramatic, Chris. Come on, it's supposed to be
dramatic.
Well,
my life is clearly not dramatic enough for Neil Breen.
Chris, would you take them to the park and then awkwardly pull at their clothes?
Oh, well.
Until
God.
Yeah, I mean.
The shirt fell off?
I would totally do that.
Yeah, it's. Really? I mean, but this scene where they meet at a park is absolutely mind-boggling to me. Because we know they're in Las Vegas. And we know, we've all been to Vegas. There are no outdoor parks in Las Vegas. It's a fucking desert. So I don't understand what's happening here. This is the biggest stretch for me. This really spoiled everything for me.
Spoiled it all.
I'm serious. Like, I have not, because you know that we all watch this shit, these shitty movies on a very regular basis. But I have not come across a movie in a very long time that gave me the bad movie feels in the same way that Fateful Findings did.
Yeah.
You mean like in a good way?
In a good way, absolutely.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, I almost feel like I'm watching some sort of B-movie version of David Lynch. It's so weird, and it's so just all over the place that I just, you can kind of have fun with it.
But at least it holds your attention. I was glued the entire time.
Are you telling me you weren't glued to The Amazing Bulk?
For some reason.
Neil Breen doesn't believe in any green screen. I'll give him that.
No green screen for Neil Breen.
If that bulk had a Breen peen, it would have been much better.
I just want to get Breen screened. So instead of a green screen, it's just like Neil's head in the background. All right, I want to get to what happens with Dylan and Leah here, because things take a turn.
Oh, that's right.
Dylan divulges once again. He's supposed to be this great hacker who's keeping all these secrets, but
international secrets, corporate secrets.
Yes, indeed.
He's gotten farther than any hacker ever.
These are both national and international secrets.
Right.
Well, and you can only get those with a damn master's in computer science.
That's correct.
Now that we've repeated our section of the podcast.
Continue. I've been drinking every time we repeat, guys.
He divulges his secrets and confides in her that he's worried that his secrets are going to be taken.
Someone's going to find out. They're going to come after you.
No one knows. But you now. But I think you're right. Others have found out what I'm doing.
Well, can I interrupt you here real quick for my favorite scene of the movie?
Please.
My absolute favorite is he's in bed with Leah. I don't remember if it's before or after he divulges these national and international secrets. But they're in bed together, and he climbs out of bed in the most awkward way possible. It's like the camera is just on him, and it takes like 20 seconds for him to climb out of bed so secretly. He's just like looking at her. And then he scoots out of bed a little bit, and a little more, and it just goes on and on and on.
Listen, Chris, what you have to understand is that there's a lot of different things going on in this movie, and sometimes it's tough. No one told Neil how humans get out of bed. He just had to learn that for himself, you know? I mean...
Well, Fateful Findings is any indication. As of 2013, he still hasn't learned that skill.
At this point, has the weird, creepy... Whatever it is, ghost creature, we've not talked about.
The mushroom ghost.
God, there's so much to unpack with this, I'm telling you.
I refer to him as dress shoes, because just someone wearing slacks and dress shoes, that's all you see, shows up a couple times in the movie. And then around the scene, what you just talked about, Chris, when they're in bed, the dress shoes comes in, walks through the house, a mirror shakes, and then they're just sleeping.
The mirror shakes for like a minute and a half.
Yeah, but they're sleeping, right? I don't think Breen does anything.
No.
And then suddenly blood spills on the floor around the shoes, and then it disappears like it died. Like nothing happened. And then leaves gold tassels on top of, what's her name? Luann? Lily? Leah. Like, and she's like, what are these? And he's like, they wake up. She's like, what are these? And he says, a friend left them for us.
Okay, Mike, something about the ending that I didn't get, I think, just came together for me.
Okay, so you want to hold on to that for...
Yeah, I want to hold on to it until we're talking about... And I mean, like, the very end, because I had a big question, and I think Mike may have just answered it.
And now here's something, though, Jay. I have no idea what you could possibly be thinking of, because I have no idea how what I just said would tie to the
end. I'm with you, Mike. No idea.
But this is what we have to do. We have to come together to try to figure out what the fuck was going on in this movie.
I kind of want to end the podcast now so I can hear Jay's insight.
We're close. We will get to it. But first, Leah gets kidnapped.
Oh, God. Yeah, I forgot.
In what features one of the best establishing shots in movie history.
Was it? We should put that on the site.
Yeah, really we'll post that image below.
Oh, my God. I don't even remember how she gets kidnapped other than, like, a weak struggle at the house. But then Breen just shows up in like, a trailer or something. She's being apparently, like, some... government spies or something? The government half-assed ninjas capture her, and Breen knows immediately where she is, I guess.
As sort of like a bargaining chip to get his government secrets?
I guess, but his government secrets also let Dylan know exactly where she's being held, apparently.
No, the kidnapper drops a business card
that
says, take her to the storage unit. Here's the address.
You know what?
Yeah, it
makes sense while watching this movie that makes no sense at all that I would miss the only thing that actually does make sense.
Yeah, it just straight up says where to take her.
It's the most straightforward thing in the movie, and I missed it.
Yeah, it really is.
There was no ransom. Really, there was nothing. It was just he found the business card.
It's supposed to be the government.
Yeah.
So Breen goes to this designated location to get Leah back, basically. And at what point do we learn that... He has...
We don't. We never learn it. We never learn it.
We don't?
No.
No. I know what you're going to say, and no, we don't. I still don't know it.
Well, then, Mike, would you like to explain to me how people are cloaking and decloaking through walls and shit?
No.
Hold on a second. Can you guys hold on 1 second?
What? Just flush.
That had to be getting ripe, dude.
Yeah, it was smelling bad in here.
All four of us have our own distinct personalities, all right? Paul,
and you're the one
shitting on the toilet every fucking episode.
I just got home from work, I mean...
Genuinely, I will be upset if you guys edit out Paul's shit stuff. Oh, if we don't editing. Know yeah. that Paul's on the toilet each episode, I will be upset.
All right, sorry. Go ahead, Mike.
No, I have nothing to say. I don't know. Like, he just... suddenly, we find out he has the ability to, like, transmorph through walls or something. Like, he's a ghost or some shit.
He makes her put the blindfold on and says, you can't tell anybody.
Yeah, also, there's that. What's that about? Who cares?
It's okay. Trust me. Trust me. I don't know. We're going to get out of here right now.
Okay.
But I need to put the blindfold back on. Trust me. Trust me. I'm going to do something that you can't see. I'm going to put the blindfold back on. Trust me. We're going to get out of here, but you can't see what's about to happen.
So then, Paul, what happens after he saves her? Anything crazy and exciting?
Well, so he saves her, and then since he gets her back, he makes the decision that it's time to hold a press conference and...
Wait, Paul, yeah. can you when you describe this section, can you describe it as abruptly and quickly as it happened in the movie?
All right, Neil Breen decides that since he's got Leah back and she's safe and sound, he is now going to hold a press conference to expose all of these government secrets. He exposes the government secrets in front of, like, the Capitol building or something in Washington, D.C. Everyone from the government comes out and immediately shoots themselves in the face.
What? Like, literally...
That's true.
He's giving his speech, his vague speech, his super vague speech about how, I've got these secrets that no innocent person will be condemned for, but I will show you government and corporate people
Listen,
who
Mike.
Have been hurting humans.
Listen, there just comes a point in time where you realize that Breen has showed up. He's going to divulge the secrets, and you have no choice but to immediately shoot yourself in the face.
I'm afraid of going to prison. They now know my crimes.
Hey, to be fair, the one guy, the president of the bank, I think he killed himself from, like, hanging or something.
Sure.
Like, I'm the president of the bank, Neil Breen's right, and I'm going to hang myself.
You got to mix it up a little bit.
It's as if he's giving this really vague speech, and it cuts to a Breen screen establishing shot of the politicians and corporate people, and they are standing there, and they've all got these, like, grins on their face, like, fuck it, we just got Breened, oh well, yep. Shit. Like, literally, they're all, like, smirking. When the guy kills himself in the car with the carbon, like, one guy kills himself in a car, he is, like, about to laugh the whole fucking time.
Hashtag, you just got Breened.
Yep.
Okay, so this brings me to the thing that I was referring to that I didn't get, but now I do. Okay, so as Breen is unpacking all of this... Mm-hmm. You see, like, a sniper's mark on his head.
Yeah, there's
like,
that.
Somebody's going to kill him over this.
That's right.
And then suddenly, that sniper, you hear a gunshot, and that sniper is just dead.
To which no one responds. No one in the audience responds to a loud gunshot.
There's never any reveal of who killed the sniper.
Yeah, I'm thinking you have an answer?
I think it's Mr. Shoes that left the
tassels. No, Shoes is dead.
That's good. See, my fan theory was that the Mushroom Ghost did it.
I think the Mushroom Ghost and Mr. Shoes is one and the same.
Oh, you think Mr. Shoes and Mushroom Ghost are in cahoots?
Or the same being.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I could see that.
Mr. Mushroom Shoes saved Neil Breen by killing the sniper.
You just said something that I think maybe is true, but it makes it more confusing to me now, because... I thought Mr. Mushroom Shoes died when all the blood pooled around his shoes. But then, now that you mention this, I remember later in this film, at the very end, you do see that weird ghost thing flying around, which is supposed to be the Mushroom Shoes spirit, I believe. Mm-hmm. So that means that Mushroom Shoes doesn't die, no matter who killed the sniper. He doesn't die when blood pools around his feet. Why did that... What? I'm... Guys?
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, that is the proper response.
Mike, deep breath. Ask yourself, what would president of the bank do?
Probably choke himself to death in his own garage.
Yeah, true, yeah.
I'm out.
Let's get to your Breen marks. These are hallmarks of Neil Breen movies, things that you will see on a regular basis. Jay.
Yeah, I was going to make a top 10, but then there's 11 because it's Neil Breen. Why not make 11?
Right.
You will see Breen as an alien or supernatural entity.
Breen, Breen, Breen.
Mm-hmm.
You will not see any bras.
Breen, Breen, Breen.
Right.
He loves close-ups of people's faces against a blue sky.
Breen, Breen, Breen. Yeah.
I think it's mostly for editing, but he does that a lot. Casting non-actors.
Breen, Breen, Breen.
He writes, directs, and stars in the movies.
Breen, Breen, Breen.
Of course.
He often uses, I believe he used in I Am Here Now also, supernatural objects. There's like an object that has some sort of mystical ability.
Yeah, it was like an orb or something that
he
picked
up
at Hobby Lobby.
Breen, Breen, Breen.
He often shoots in the desert.
Breen, Breen, Breen.
Yes.
Some themes, government, corruption, and conspiracies.
Breen, Breen, Breen.
So many shots of feet.
Breen, Breen, Breen.
All the women want Breen.
Breen, Breen, Breen.
Yeah.
Of course.
And repeating lines at least twice.
Breen, Breen,
I can't
Jesus.
Believe you committed suicide.
And repeating lines at least twice.
Breen,
Breen, Breen. Jeez, that's a low minimum. I'd put it at like 3 at least.
But
Jesus.
That Jay, that leads in nicely to a question that I wanted to ask all of you guys and get your take on as we start to wrap things up here. You know, there's a lot of B movies out there that are self-aware, or there are a lot of B movie filmmakers that are self-aware. The most egregious example, of course, is the Sharknado series. They are not genuinely trying to make a good movie. They know going into it that they are making a bad movie. And so the question that I have for you guys, is Neil Breen self-aware? Does he have an understanding that the movies that he makes are not the best thing, or is this something that he's maybe kind of doing on purpose?
Well, I actually listened to an interview with him where they more or less directly ask him about this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he did say, he said the movies are not written to be humorous.
Mm-hmm.
That said, he does completely embrace the cult following and the cult audience. And his thing is, he just wants to keep getting better as a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. So I think his intent is 100% genuine.
Well, that makes sense, because I will say that we all struggled a little bit. I think we enjoyed, or at least I enjoyed watching I Am Here ... now for the marathon, which came out in, I think, 2009. Fateful Findings, which came out in 2013, there's a noticeable difference in the terms of the editing and the pacing. So in that regard, he is getting better.
Totally. Totally. And it makes me actually really excited to see Pass Through.
Yes, Pass Through is the movie that he did that came out last year. Chris and Mike, do you feel like chiming in on this?
You know, I kind of see it as a mostly serious and non-self-aware movie, but except for one scene when they're on his desk with his computers or whatever, and they're hugging very passionately, and Neil just kind of like throws a book and he's throwing some papers and he's got a fire in his eye that I didn't see through the entire movie, as if like I'm throwing these papers to signify passion, but he's doing it kind of playfully and in a very self-aware way.
God, I don't know. That's a good question, because that scene, I just wanted to throw myself out a window. I couldn't handle it.
Totally. I mean, it was a terrible scene.
I'm glad you guys brought this scene up, because it was so... They're tearing each other's clothes off, but really badly. Like...
Terribly!
Like, you don't tear someone... Well, A, you just don't... No one does this. You don't tear someone's shirt off. But, like, if you did, like, that is, like, serious. You tear it off, and then you fuck. They, like, tore it a little bit and went, like, shit, didn't work. Here's a hug. And then...
Rip.
It was literally like aliens doing their best impression of maybe what it looks like if humans are trying to get it on.
Yeah, or it was almost like the terror didn't work, and so he grabs a handful of paper and is like, oops, silly me, and just throws it in the air.
I'm just getting crazy. I'm just going silly. For it.
Oh, and then he knocked one of his computers off the desk, too, and I was like, the battery totally
but
flew out.
He halfway caught it. Like, he wanted to, like... just with reckless abandon, just push it off the desk, but he actually just kind of lightly set it on the floor.
Hey, those 10-year-old laptops don't come cheap, you know.
I have to quickly backtrack for just 1 second before we get into ratings, because if I don't mention this, my girlfriend will kill me, because she laughed so hard at this part. We watched it together, and she laughed so hard that she got up and rewound the movie to watch it again when he's in his office and he's got like a cup of coffee and
that was amazing.
He's fading fast and he spills the coffee on his laptop and it's the just worst piece of acting I think I've ever seen in my life.
He doesn't. He passes out on his laptop. He doesn't spill it as he passes out. And then his eyes open. It's like he needs a sip of coffee before he passes out. And he's his lips reaching toward the coffee. And then he spills it on the keyboard.
And dumps it on his face.
It's all over.
If there's a real victim in this movie, it's Neil Breen's office. He constantly is throwing stuff around and throwing books and throwing laptops and throwing
books.
Papers.
Like, so awkwardly throwing these fucking blank books.
Yeah.
Don't call here anymore. No more damn books. No more books. Rating time.
Guys, I want to ask you, 1 out of 100 Breen nipples, what do you give Fateful Findings?
I think there's an earnestness to this movie that keeps your attention, and even if it's the earnestness of a train wreck. So I don't know if I'd watch this by myself again, but with friends who've never seen it, I'll give it a solid 75 Breen nips.
All right, Michael.
Well, as someone who has watched this by themselves twice now,
God, you live in Chicago. Bring some. I know that you have plenty of friends who live around you. Bring some freaking people over.
You know what happens when I watch a bad movie with someone?
What?
They don't let me focus. I like to get real deep into this thing. I like to just... I like to stare the Breen right in the mouth. And
Mike, let me know the next time you're staring the Breen right in the mouth, and I'll come over.
Oh, we should get together and watch this again.
Yeah.
And you know, Mike, when you stare into the Breen...
The Breen stares
back at
me?
Don't, the Breen doesn't stare into you. You end up naked in a room covered in trash bags.
1 out of 100.
Jesus, it's hot. God. 70 nips.
70, okay. Hanging in the 70s, Jay.
80.
Ooh.
80.
I thought this was a lot of fun. I would suggest anybody who likes B-movies go watch it.
I think it's more fun than The Room, really. I mean,
absolutely like more fun than
like
The Room.
That seems to be the standard modern day B movie. That's not Sharknado, and this is way better.
I can 100% like definitely recommend that people watch this.
Yeah, I have to agree with all of you. I think, like Chris said, it is done in earnestness. There's no real tongue in cheek stuff involved, which I really can't stand most of the time. I can't say enough good things about it. I think you're absolutely right that it's best in a group setting, preferably with alcohol, to help you get through some of the madness.
Oh, there was alcohol.
I got to go 92. Ooh. Neil Breen nips. Nice. Loved this movie. I absolutely loved it. I would say it's probably pretty easily in my top 20 favorite bad movies of all time, if not my top 10.
Yeah, can I amend? Can I give an amending? Like, I'm thinking about other scores, and 80. Let me put an 80 on it.
Oh, we got a 75, two 80s, and a 92. So there you go. Neil Breen, Fateful Findings. It is available on Amazon Prime. If you're an Amazon customer, get on there and check it out for free. And if you're not, spend a couple bucks, rent it. You will not regret it. It is... in a class by itself, no doubt about it.
Yeah. Or you can go to fatefulfindings.biz, and that is the only legal way to purchase.
Yes, but Mike, I was listening to the Flophouse do their episode on Fateful Findings. One of the guys ordered the DVD and it never showed up.
I know, yeah, that's what I was.
Hey, Neil Breen ain't got time to send out your shit.
Apparently not.
Breen, 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 Breen.
On the next episode of B-Movie Mania,
Fists, Stars, the North Side of the Apocalypse. Join us next time as we talk about Gary Daniels, Malcolm McDowell, and Downtown Julie Brown in 1995's Fist of the North Star.
Nice. Yeah. I like it.
That'll be a welcome relief from the bullshit we went through today.
Wubba wubba wubba, goodbye.
Listen up, maniacs. Do you have a question or a comment? Would you like to send some bourbon to Uncle Lloydie? You can contact the gang on Facebook at B-Movie Mania. You can also drop them a line at bmoviemania.com. Reach out. Touch them. They're touching themselves. And they might just reach back. I'm Lloyd Kaufman saying, see you next time on B-Movie Mania. Woohoo!
Bing, bing, bing!